Anvil Overhead Doors for its support of Focus 580. Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in Central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In this first hour of the program, we will be talking about some recent changes in U.S. immigration law and also about a proposal that President Bush made back at the beginning of the year that would bring about a significant change in the nation's immigration laws. It would, in effect, create a guest worker program for the United States. This would allow people who are here illegally or foreign workers outside the country apply for a temporary work permit. We'll try to talk about that and perhaps some of the benefits and some of the disadvantages to people who might want to apply, and also give people who are listening the opportunity to ask other sorts of questions about immigration law. We'll be doing that here this morning with two guests, Debbie and Richard Schell. They are both attorneys who specialize in dealing with immigration. They're both graduates of the Southern Illinois University Law School. They're members of the American Bar Association and the Illinois Bar Association. In addition, Debbie Schell is a member of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, and currently they practice immigration law in the Chicago area. They're also the authors, co-authors, of a book which could, I think, be a very good resource for a lot of folks. The book is titled U.S. Immigration and Citizenship Q&A, and it includes changes that have come about in immigration regulations since September 11th of 2001. It is a paperback. It's published by Sphinx Publishing in Naperville, and is not terribly expensive, and it has a lot of information on things that have to do with visas, green cards, and so forth. And if people listening, again, I want to make sure that people know that if you're listening this morning and you have those kinds of questions, I'm sure that our guests would do their best to give you an answer. Here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455 is the number to call. We do also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us around Illinois or Indiana. In fact, if you're listening on the internet and if you're in the United States, you may also use that toll-free line. That's 800-222-9455. So at any point here, people have questions, you're certainly welcome to call. Well, Debbie Schell, hello.
Good morning, David. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And Richard Schell.
Good morning, David.
Thank you both for talking with us.
Thanks for having us.
One of the things I thought we should do definitely here at the beginning was to talk a little bit about this proposal that President Bush has made. And obviously, we're just talking about, a sense, an idea that he has laid on the table. It hasn't gone any further than that. But let's talk about what it does and what it does not do. That is, what it is and what it's not. So if we start with the first, well, what exactly is this proposal that he's made?
Well, David, I think you got it. You nailed it right on the head. What it is a guest worker program. It would allow people to come into the United States for a limited time and work legally. Mm-hmm. It would also provide them with some benefits and possibly some tax-deferred savings accounts, and it would, for them, allow them to come here and make money much easier than what they do now in the underground economy as an undocumented worker. And at least potentially for U.S. employers, it would solve the huge problems they have getting willing workers to work at the amount they're willing to pay mm-hmm. for some of these jobs.
That's one of the issues that I think the president has raised. He has, in talking about why he thinks this would be a good idea, he has suggested that there are jobs that need to be filled that American workers aren't interested in. Do you think that that's actually true? And would this address, if that's a need, would this really address it?
Well, I think in large part that what the president is saying is true. If you look specifically at the agricultural field, states like California, they tend to have a very difficult time sometimes getting workers to do the work necessary to get the crops in with the picking and things like that. And so they have found it difficult to get U.S. workers to do that. And the workers who are interested in doing it in the underground economy are essential to their industry.
Mm-hmm.
I must observe as a follow-up, as a farm child, I walked soybeans and corn, something anybody in Champaign is very familiar with. Now they import workers to do that because they can't get enough native U.S. workers who want to walk back and forth in a soybean or cornfield with a hoe and hoe weeds out of it. So even in Illinois, in the areas where they need workers in agriculture to do that kind of stuff, they're running out of people willing to do it at the amounts they're willing to pay.
Mm. And just so people understand here, this is something that is intended to be temporary, mm-hmm. And that is that after having been here for 3 years, then these workers are expected to leave the United States and go home. Is there any possibility for extension, or would they have to go back to their home countries and then apply again, and then could they have another 3 years?
Well, that's definitely part of what the president talked about. And as the proposal stands now, there seems to be an indication that after the initial 3 years, the person would be required to go back home for some period of time before being eligible to apply again. And, of course, there are other factors that tie into whether or not a person would be allowed to come back for a second round. One being that they had a favorable work record when they were here, that they don't have any criminal or security issues, but they could certainly apply to get that time extended.
Hmm. Is there any restriction on the number of times that a person could do this, assuming that they fulfill the basic qualifications and there's no difficulty with them coming into the country, and they're here for their 3 years, they go back for the specified period of time, they reapply, they come back. Is there any limit on the number of times a person could do that?
Well, I would say that I didn't see specific language on that in the president's proposal. However, when Eduardo Aguirre, who is the director of the Immigration Service now, gave his comments, he did really seem to indicate that although there might be an opportunity for extension, the expectation is that at some point a person would be required to return back to their home country, and then that would be the end of their opportunity to use the program.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose that as this is something that if it was going to become law, it would have to be passed by the Congress, I suppose that various details, these and other things, would be subject to some negotiation in writing the bill and then getting it passed, if it was going to pass.
I think that you can very safely say that the proposal that is currently being bandied around is the Ag Jobs proposal we talked about. That enjoys mm-hmm. bipartisan support, and you can anticipate that there will be a lot of very intense scrutiny and debate and give and take over this, particularly during an election year.
Yeah. Well, that gets at one of the questions that I wanted to raise, and just wanted to see what your opinion was. And looking at some of what's been written about this since the president proposed it, people have started to line up one side or another, and mm-hmm. it's kind of difficult to – I don't think that you can necessarily predict how someone's going to feel about it. There seem to be Republicans and Democrats who both think it's a good idea and not. Certainly labor seems to have strong feelings about it. Do you think there's obviously the potential for this to be rather controversial. I think some people think that, in fact, for that reason, that it's not likely that anything, it's not going to go anywhere before the election, and probably not before next year, actually.
Well, the problem, I think you've hit that directly on the head. The problem right now is that, just to compare it with the first proposal, it had a lot of very heavy hitters behind it, like the Agricultural Employees Group and things like that. And it had bipartisan support. Right now, this is the president's proposal during an election year. So people in his own party are not necessarily thrilled with it. The candidate for the Republican nomination, Oberweis, just ran a very controversial immigration ad in Chicago. And he, of course, is a Republican, a member of the same party the president is. And in addition to that, Democrats, of course, have little incentive to get behind this to help the president during an election year. So I don't know whether it will go anywhere. I think that's a very good question.
But let me just very quickly introduce the two of you again for anybody who might have just tuned in. We're talking with Richard Schell, he's the last person you heard, and also Debbie Schell. They are attorneys. They practice law in the Chicago area, and they specialize in dealing with immigration. They are the authors, co-authors, along with Kurt Wagner, of the book U.S. Immigration and Citizenship Q&A, which would be, I think, a good resource for anybody who has those sorts of questions. And, of course, if you do, you could call in and ask them here this morning, and I'm sure that our guests would do their best to give you an answer. 333-9455, that's the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. There is already a proposal, and I guess I'm not quite sure where this is, in Congress to do something kind of like what the president has talked about, specifically to address the need for agricultural workers. Mm-hmm. How is that similar or different from now what the president is talking about? Is it essentially the same kind of thing?
Well, the major difference, of course, is that it is specifically designed for people who have worked in agriculture. But the other thing is that the Ag Jobs Bill would lead to a lawful permanent residency in the United States, and that's why the groups who are pro-immigrant and tend to sympathize with them are in favor of it. The Ag Jobs Bill, as opposed to the president's plan, is definitely not a guest worker program. It is a plan which would lead to lawful permanent residency or a green card, as it's more commonly known. The mm-hmm. president's proposal is more kind of green card transparent. If you married a U.S. citizen, which is one of the primary ways, of course, you can become a lawful permanent resident of the United States, it would neither help you nor hinder you. The president's plan would. But the Ag Jobs program would have helped people. Or if it eventually passes and gets signed into law, it would help people become mm-hmm. lawful permanent residents. Well, that's probably the key difference.
Yeah, I think that's probably an important thing that people need to keep in mind about the proposal that the president has made, is right. that for those people who are interested in becoming permanent residents or American citizens, that his proposal doesn't do any. It's not going to make that any easier for those people who apply for this temporary worker status.
That's right, David. And in fact, the president was very clear in his proposal to point out that this is absolutely not intended to lead to green card status, as was the 1986 proposal of amnesty. The president certainly in the proposal has not ruled out that if some of these workers had another tie-in to become lawful permanent residents, then certainly they could take that track, but this specific guest worker program would not put them in line for a green card. Hmm.
We have a caller here, someone on a cell phone who would like to talk with you, so let's do that.
Sure.
Okay.
Line number one. Hello.
Hi there.
Yes.
I have a question about the Permanent Partner Immigration Act. My partner is from England, and she was staying with me for over a year on a B-2 visa. Mm-hmm. And when we tried to come back into the country after a trip to England for Christmas, she was denied entry. And now she is unable to get the American Embassy in England, London specifically, to speak to her to apply for another visa. And she can no longer come back without applying for a visa because her visa waiver has been revoked. What is, in your opinion, the likelihood of the Permanent Partner Immigration Act passing in the near future?
Well, with this president, it's probably not very likely at all. And I certainly feel sorry for your plight. Anybody who's in the position of having to deal with an American embassy or consulate right now is in a rough spot, because before there were all sorts of waivers available for the personal interview requirement, and now they're gone. So pretty much it means that someone is going to have to physically stand in line at an American embassy or consulate to talk to a consular official. And these are truly frightening meetings. I mean, you get 30 seconds to pitch your case to a very busy, overworked government bureaucrat who's going to move on. And they get to decide a lot of what happens to your fate based on that 30 seconds.
Yeah, we found that out.
Yeah, it's a rough, rough spot to be in. And American embassies and consulates after 911 are not particularly friendly places to be.
Okay. Right. Well, I appreciate your input. Thank you.
All right. Thanks
Thank
for the call.
Thanks.
We have someone else here in Champaign, another caller, line number two. Hello.
Hello. I heard a story some time ago on NPR about someone who had come over from India, and he lived with, I think, his uncle and worked for him. Mm-hmm. It was a virtual slave, really. Mm-hmm. What's the status of workers? Like, do they have access to the courts? Has there been any discussion of how this new proposal would relate to legal rights that they would have?
Right. That's actually one of the things that the president has indicated that's a benefit of the proposal, is that it would tend to, or hopefully, alleviate some of the problems that undocumented workers have had with, being taken advantage of and subjected to, slave labor. Part of the problem for undocumented workers is, do they have a legal right to present their case in court? I suppose they do. But when they weigh that against the possibility of bringing unwanted attention to themselves, given the fact that they are, in illegal status, most of them are unlikely to do so. The other problem is, because of their status, they're unlikely to leave an unfavorable job situation because they don't know if they can get another job, they don't know if their employer will turn them in. And so part of the president's proposal is that, it gives these workers an opportunity to sort of come out into the light and be recognized. They have access to the U.S. Legal courts, and they can move from job to job. If they feel they're not being treated well in one job, they can move to another job without worrying about that.
Does that, caller, get at your question?
Yes, yes, thank you.
All right.
You're welcome.
Other people who are listening again are certainly welcome to call 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. So I don't know to the extent that you would feel like expressing an opinion, but for undocumented workers here in the United States now, or for someone who would be mm-hmm. thinking about coming to the United States and wanted to come here to work and was going to come, no matter what, it sounds as if this probably would be an improvement over the kinds of conditions that they would be dealing with now. I mean, is it a good thing if this was passed? Would it be a good thing if this was passed?
Well, it's hard to. The situation right now for undocumented workers is so perilous that almost anything would be an improvement in some ways, because you just can't underestimate the kind of practical difficulties living in the U.S. unlawfully presents. And I mean, immigration is very controversial, but nonetheless, they face a lot of very basic hurdles to just living here. The driver's license problems, paying your taxes problems, going to a job and knowing that you can be fired for any reason at any minute, and maybe you'll be paid entirely in cash and you'll never even be able to have a bank account. So I would say that it would be an improvement. And the other thing is that one thing that the director made clear in his Senate prepared testimony was that he said the whole system is broken, and he gave the president credit for addressing it. When the guy who's running the place tells you the system is broken, it's probably time to address the system.
Yeah.
This plan would require people here under the provisions of the plan to register, and then there is this requirement that at the end of the 3 years they would be expected to return home. How do you anticipate that would be enforced? What would the government do to make certain that at the end of the 3 years that an individual actually did go back home?
Well, that's one of the issues that the immigration system in the U.S. has struggled with for years. And things have changed quite a bit after 9/11. Part of the reason that the president thinks it's a good idea for the workers to come out and register is for, security of U.S. borders. There has been a significant amount of resources, money, technology now thrown at just that problem of keeping track of who's here, how long they're supposed to be here, and who needs to go and find them when they've not left on time. So presumably, along with the proposal, would come even further resources for keeping track of those who have registered and exactly how long they're supposed to be here, and enforcing and making sure that they leave when they're supposed to.
Mm-hmm. Well, already we've certainly have seen a problem where there is a concern. There has been a concern voiced in the past about people who come here, people who do come here legally on some sort of temporary visa, and whether or not they then overstay, or whether they're, for example, if they're here on a student visa, are they actually a student? Are they actually in school?
Go ahead. Well, I couldn't help jumping in. The
yes.
Government Accounting Office, the GAO, says that they guess that the estimate of people that you refer to, the overstays, or is in the millions. Mm-hmm. And before 9-1-1, the INS had at best, and will always be the INS to me because that's what I learned it as first, but they had a loose idea, a very loose idea of who had entered the U.S. and who had left. But after 9-1-1, the full weight of the federal government fell on that question to answer who was here and how long they stayed.
Well, do we really have an accurate handle on that very question?
I think only John Ashcroft can answer that question for you, in his former job of running it. Now maybe Secretary Ridge could tell you for sure. I think, my own personal opinion, I think they have a better idea. But the fact that the day after the president proposed this, he also kind of got taken to task by the GAO, which said, look, there's a huge backlog in immigration processing. What are we going to do about that? And the delays are huge. And the more money and effort and time you spend on enforcement, the less you're going to spend on processing legitimate immigration requests. There's only so much money and time and people to throw at these projects. I think they're getting a better idea.
We have another caller here, someone in Urbana on line one.
Great.
Hello.
Yeah, you were talking about how they probably have a better idea, but oddly enough, you know, on C-SPAN last week, they were interviewing a author, Michelle Malkin, wrote Invasion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know her book or not.
No, it's not ringing a bell, but...
Well, it's all about the INS and our visa programs, and the interview was in October of 2002, and she was talking about a year, you know, more than a year after 9/11, and she was talking about how the IDENT program, which was supposed to screen out criminals, in through the INS, how it was totally not being used. She was talking about computers stacked up on corners of the INS, and she really tore into the INS in regards to trying to screen out criminals. And she, one of her anecdotes had to do with Angel Resendez. Who was a serial killer out of Mexico, and I'm Latino, so you know, my ears perked up at this, and he went in and out of the United States, and if his warrant information had been put on the IDENT system, you know, he would have been, since he was picked up many times, he would have been jailed, and you know, I mean, it really sounded as if the INS is not the place where you want to bank on the ability of the people there to stop criminals from coming in. And it didn't sound as if... And she said that James Ziegler, his appointment to the INS demoralized everybody there because the guy has no law enforcement, for example, history at all. He's a friend of Trent Watts and Ted Kennedy, and et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, I wanted to ask you about two programs that were very interesting in this interview. I jotted them down because I didn't really know about them, and she was talking about the corruption involved in both of them, and I was just curious if you knew anything about what your take on these would be. One was called the Investor Visa Program. She says that it allows foreigners to, you know, invest in some sort of company over here, and then they can bring their family employees, and there's a lot of fraud in that, she says. And the other one was the Transit Without a Visa Program, where she says wealthy people, Saudis, for example, will come in, fly into an airport, and it's supposed to be kept in secure lounges, but it's routine that these lounges are not guarded, so the people just leave the lounge and are in this country, or occasionally, or when it is guarded, the people that are involved are easily bribed. Can you talk about those things? And I'll hang up. Thanks.
Well, let me kind of take them in reverse order. The transit without visa was, of course, heavily scrutinized after 9/11, and they really cracked down on that. But to take your other question about investor visas, investor visas are nothing. It's nothing new that the U.S. does that other countries don't. Almost every country has a program where you can invest in that country, and for a certain amount of money, you get on the track to acquire lawful permanent residency and ultimately citizenship. Usually, they're fairly desirable countries. The Canadians had a huge influx from Hong Kong when the mainland Chinese took it over, of wealthy Chinese people who had acquired Canadian citizenship. Belize has a program. So there's nothing new that the U.S. has with it. But of course, whenever you have something as tangible and direct a benefit as what the ability to come to the United States is, and work here, and leave, and go back and forth, and perhaps bring your family, all things that we take for granted as American citizens, you're going to have people who are willing to spend a lot of money to short-circuit that process and acquire the benefit.
Okay, well, I hope that gets at the questions that the caller asked. I want to, again, introduce our guests, and we'll go on to some other folks. We're speaking with Richard and Debbie Schell. They're attorneys who specialize in immigration law, and their practice is in a suburb of Chicago. And if you have questions, I know they would do their best to give you an answer. They are also, by the way, the co-authors of a book that aims at answering a lot of basic immigration questions, which is titled U.S. Immigration and Citizenship Q&A. It's a paperback. It's published by Sphinx Publishing out of Naperville. Is not terribly expensive, and would be a good source of that kind of information if you have questions. But again, if you're here listening this morning and you have a question, you can call in, and I'm sure they will do their best to give you an answer. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Urbana, here where we are, line number two. Hello.
Good morning. Good
morning. Mm-hmm. Morning.
I was wondering if you would address the issue of how this guest worker program would affect the already depressed labor rates of unskilled workers in this country. I've heard the model of the American native-born Americans or American citizens don't want to work in the picking of vegetables and things like that. Probably because they don't get paid worth a damn, and naturally, no employer, especially in a heavily market oriented field such as agriculture, isn't going to want to pay a nickel more than they have to get anything done.
Right.
And so, as far as just speaking in very broad terms here, this sort of thing looks to me to be just yet another example of the Bush Republican oligarchy doing things that will help promote the interests of the wealthy and well-to-do at the expense of the powerless and the economically disadvantaged. And I was wondering if you would talk about that, please. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, go ahead. Debbie, Richard?
Debbie, you want to... Well, I guess there's no question that immigration policy, both at the largest federal level, what we would call national security overriding goals of the U.S. versus this proposal during election year, are all guided by competing concerns. And one of the concerns is always with immigration, you want to do policies that will benefit the United States and its kind of broad objectives, which would be to achieve peace abroad and prosperity at home. So within that, the requirements for generally getting foreign workers in to fill a job in the U.S., in many cases they require a process known as labor certification, where the employer has a duty to test the market and find out how many American workers are willing and if they're able to fill them. And the broad preference, of course, that's reflected in federal policy is that jobs be filled with American workers who are willing and able to work at the rate they're being offered. As for the other issues, there's no question. It's being immigration and international trade issues and how the globalization of the American economy and all other economies, by that, you know, for that matter, is hotly debated. Immigration is just part of the mix with the whole huge WTO disputes and how the U.S. is going to remain competitive and all that. I mean, in general, of course, as an immigration lawyer, I favor as open borders as we can get because I want to live in the country that attracts the very most motivated, most talented, most skilled, most determined to contribute people because the theory is that if they come here and work in the United States as opposed to the European Union, the United States will benefit from their creativity and hard work and initiative and drive.
Okay, well, let's go on. We'll go to caller here next on cell phone, line number one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I'd like to really counter the previous caller's one-sided comments in terms of the fact that the American consumer wants to pay the least amount and get the best quality. It's not just helping businesses if we have cheaper workers, but when we export jobs, as we deal with NAFTA, we get a benefit from it as consumers. And I don't make enough money that I want to, you know, spend more than I have to. And I'm very confused by people who support the United States should uniaxially or unilaterally, invade a country if it wants to or feels the need to, but that when we deal with other countries in terms of doing labor there, we're supposed to make sure that their people live comparably to us. And I don't know why that should be. And it's also very misleading because when you hear that a worker in China makes a dollar a day, mm-hmm. they're not living in America. That dollar buys more than it buys in this country. And it's very misleading when they talk about the salary of a person in another country mm-hmm. relative to us, unless you know what it buys in that country. So I think there's a whole, I find this very confusing when people come out against NAFTA and when they come out against bringing immigrants in. We're now worried about the software community going out to India, which is a good thing except for the engineers who don't get their jobs here. But, I mean, basically, I think we just have a free market, and I'd like your comments on that. Thank you.
All right. Well, you want to come on that?
Sure. I think that that's a very good point, and that underscores, the last two calls, I think, really underscore just how hotly debated this issue is and what the arguments are on both sides. Certainly, you know, there's the concern of American workers and the economy that we're struggling with a little bit right now. But I think one thing that's very important to remember and something that I think the president tried to stress in his proposal is that the jobs that he's talking about with this proposal are ones that are not exclusive to undocumented workers. I mean, these are presumably jobs that the U.S. employers are saying, we do not have enough American workers who are willing to do these jobs, and we need someone to do these jobs. And there is a labor force, undocumented, of people who are willing to do the jobs. And I think that's a good point. I think both callers had both good points, and that's really sort of the crux of the debate. And, you know, you could go back and forth all day on both of them.
But let me again introduce our guests, and I want to make sure that people know we've gotten into some more broad philosophical and political questions about immigration, which wasn't exactly what we intended. Now, if people want to do that, I guess that's okay. But I also want to make sure that people know that kind of the idea was to talk about some of the technical aspects.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And if people have questions about that, our guests, Debbie Schell and Richard Schell, they're attorneys who practice law in the Chicago area, and immigration law is their specialty. We did begin talking about the proposal that President Bush has made to create this guest worker program for the country and how exactly that would work and what it would mean, and also other sorts of questions about immigration law, particularly how things have changed since September 11th of 2001. That's kind of what we thought we were going to try to do here this morning. But, you know, whatever people want to do. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The next caller up is in Champaign, and that would be line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Morning.
Yeah. Good morning. I listen to your program all the time, never call in. I'm calling because I feel very experienced in some of this and some of the nonsense that people do not seem to understand. I was in the nurse, before I retired, I was in the nursery business for almost 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
For many years, I had no Central American or Mexican employees. And it was not about low wages. I always tried to pay a good wage or mm-hmm. the highest wage. I could not hire anybody. I couldn't get anybody to work. So slowly, I tried to hire Hispanic or Mexican employees, which there are millions, as everybody knows, in this country, undocumented. The people would come in with false IDs. I attempted everything to find out the proper way to handle it and found out that there's a black hole out there.
Mm-hmm.
And in hiring the people, after I did, I got reports that they were illegal at the end of the year when they their Social Security forms and so forth, or they had two Social Security numbers or mm-hmm. whatever.
Right.
And in almost all cases, these were people who were hardworking family people with children.
Right.
And I even went so far as to call attorneys. And my son was an attorney in Chicago, to call him in Chicago, and found out that if they didn't have degrees, people were not interested in it, that it took $5,000 for them to talk to an attorney.
Hmm.
The attorney guaranteed nothing. And in the process, I got to the place where I didn't care.
Hmm.
I, in fact, hired illegal people for years and paid them cash. I hate to admit that, but I did because they became family.
Yeah.
We were paying wages of $12 to $15 an hour. While they're not union wages, they're also not starvation wages.
No, that's a going rate for Central Illinois. That's a pretty good wage.
Well, yeah. I know that.
Yeah.
I tried everything, and in fact, ask the silly question. You're going to think I'm crazy.
No.
But I adopt some of these people.
Hmm.
And I was looked at like I was insane
mm-hmm.
because I said, these people have worked for me for 7 or 8 years. They have become my family.
Right.
Yeah.
And in the process, I've got so much nonsense from people
mm-hmm.
that they had no interest nor didn't seem to understand. So several young men, one time about 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
were picked up in a scam.
Wow.
And I was not supposed to help them, not supposed to do anything. I did, in fact, behind the scenes help them. They got out of jail, and nobody cared. They just
mm-hmm.
disappeared. And I know for a fact that these people just work hard, not all of them, but most of them,
right.
and then disappear and come back someplace else.
Right.
And I've just become so frustrated over the years at the nonsense that INS doesn't have anybody to really do anything
mm-hmm.
unless, you know, you're a serious criminal. These were for traffic tickets.
Right.
For something like that. Or a phony driver's license.
Yeah.
And there's so many of these things that go on, and I was just calling this morning out of total frustration that people don't understand that we don't have a labor force
right.
that is interested in the job. Say what you want.
Right.
And I appreciate you listening to me.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
I think that's a very good point, and I think the caller underscored a little bit what Rich said earlier, which is that just the basic day-to-day living for someone who is in the United States, who is undocumented, can be very difficult. As the caller mentioned, just, you know, the prospect of taxes at the end of the year or having a driver's license. And presumably and allegedly in President Bush's proposal, that's one of the things that he says that this proposal is designed to address, which is the fair that an undocumented worker has in being found out and being picked up for something small and then having to lead really a transient life. There's no, you know, mechanism by which they can be sure that they can go to their job on a certain day and feel comfortable that they're going to get to go home at the end of that day. So one of the things that having the people come out and register do is assure them that, okay, you're in our system, we know that you're here working, it's okay for you to be here working. If you have a problem on a job, you have the opportunity to move. If you want to go back home and visit your family members, you can go back and come back to the United States without having to be worrying about being picked up by an immigration official.
All right, well, let's go on. Go to Chicago for the next caller, line number 4. Hello.
Hi. I just want to make one brief comment before I ask my questions, but I wonder if we really, if it's the fact that we don't have the laborers, or is it the fact that we have such a horrendous transportation system or lack of transportation in our country that we can't get workers to jobs, or I should say unemployed people, unemployable people to where the jobs are, and that is something that we need to look at perhaps even more than bringing in guest workers, because that's an ongoing that affects every aspect of our economy. But I'm having some questions about the migration proposal, that immigration proposal that Mr. Bush has suggested. My understanding was that people would be brought in for 3 years only. And so my question is, if the worker comes in with a contract for 3 years, does he have to repatriate after the 3 years and then come back in? And how would that affect his ability to be here the required 5 years before you apply for citizenship? And the second question is, I understand that you're under that new law, you would only be able to stay as long as you were employed, which seems to me would have a negative effect on the ability of the worker to protest, because the employer could simply fire you, and you can only stay in the country if you do have a job. My last question is, presumably many of these jobs will be low-paying, and that's, we know that. And if they are low-paying jobs, such as housekeepers, daycare workers, people in the restaurants, kitchens, and things like that, where presently many immigrants are now, who's covering their benefits? Will there be a tax on corporations and business owners, or is this simply going to be dumped on the taxpayer again?
All very good questions. I'll try to start with the first question, which is that you're quite right. The initial period of employment for these guest workers would be 3 years, at the end of which, right now at least, they're saying that the worker might have an opportunity to extend that time. But my understanding of the proposal is that they would, in fact, have to return to their home country for some period of time before reapplying for a second, sort of a second stint of the 3 years.
Okay, so that would not lead to citizenship.
Well, that's something that President Bush has made very clear, is that this proposal is not intended to advance an individual in their line if they're seeking a green card. Typically, if someone is in the United States, if an alien is in the United States for 5 years with a green card, and a little bit less if they're married to a U.S. citizen, after that period they could then apply for U.S. citizenship. But President Bush has made very clear that this particular job proposal is not intended to automatically put someone on the path for a green card. If they have another way of getting, perhaps they can attempt that. But this is not the program for such a person.
Okay.
And I'll let Rich address the other two questions.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Well, the first point, of course, is well made. The U.S. transportation system is not very friendly to workers. And what was your last question, caller?
I think that she was interested. Well, one of the questions she asked was, the issue is that this is supposed to be for people who have a job, and what happens if you lose that job? Is there some sort of grace period in which you're entitled to be looking for another job before you have to have another one, and that at some point, if a person went too long without being employed, would that then mean that they would have to leave?
Well, the biggest advantage, of course, to this proposal is that they could find a job legally during that period, because with the portability provisions, which means you can go from employer to employer, they can probably find a job, and they can also presumably benefit from unemployment compensation. And as far as who pays, well, the thing that also isn't brought up in this debate that probably should be is that undocumented workers, you know, are not, they're not really going to benefit from the taxes, and there's also taxes that people who are paid in cash are simply not going to pay. If you enroll all these people and you can tax them as you would regular U.S. workers, well, somebody's going to have to pay for Social Security, and that's one of the things that we don't talk about because Social Security is so controversial in American politics, but who is going to pay? And these undocumented workers, of course, if you can move them from a cash economy to being on W-2s like everybody else with a hefty bite for those programs, become a source of revenue to pay in to keep the programs going.
Okay, well, we have a number of other callers, and we have about 7 minutes, so we'll try to get as many as we can. We'll go next to Champaign County and line 3. Hello.
Yeah, this portability thing that you just talked about, the impact of the previous caller's question about, to my mind, this would sort of formalize the control that undocumented workers have over them by employees, but this portability thing is the thing that you just mentioned that I'd like for you to explain. What does that mean? And that, you know, this is a proposal. We don't know how much of it will actually be implemented, but it could be that it would just turn into formalizing the kind of control that undocumented workers experience now, where they would be, you know, if they did lose the job, or they would be pressured by the current employer if this portability thing wasn't enacted in the way that you're suggesting it might be. But the other thing that you just mentioned about Social Security is a lot of undocumented workers are in the cash economy, but some of them are working on false Social Security numbers, right. And there's a huge amount of money. I think I heard about nearly a third of $1 billion that goes into the Social Security fund that isn't claimed by anybody because it's undocumented workers. In fact, this is one of the things that's at stake, I think. Who knows how much is in the cash economy, but we kind of do have an idea of how much unclaimed Social Security revenue is out there.
There's a huge problem with unclaimed Social Security and with mismatched Social Security numbers because, of course, you know, sometimes the question is not that they don't have one. The question is they have four. Which one would you like to use today? And that really doesn't benefit anybody because these are taxes that are paid that should probably be accredited to the people.
Well, it benefits the system, I mean.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Your other question, really, you can't, I don't think you can even begin to overestimate in any way how much power employers have over illegal or undocumented workers right now. Anything that you can do to improve their chances of moving in the U.S. economy from job to job, I think will benefit people, will benefit the economy as a whole, because then they'll be able to counter some of the worst abuses. But, and also, I thought, Collier, you had a very good observation, that is, this is a proposal. This is kind of the broad sweeping directions of where we'd like to go. It has not been presented to Congress. Congress hasn't gotten hold of it yet. Nobody has hammered out what a legislative package would look like based on this proposal yet.
Well, a lot of people think that it wasn't a serious proposal, that it actually was, and they knew that it wasn't going anywhere. But presuming that it did have some legs, it would, the portability thing, how that was implemented would, control more or less how much control the current employee would have. Obviously, it probably would be more than for completely undocumented workers, but it could be implemented in a way where, they would have to leave within 2 weeks or something, and maybe they couldn't get a job in that period of time through the paperwork. So they
exactly.
so the employer would have amazing amount of control over.
Yeah, I think that that one thing that we should mention is if you look at the proposal as it is written now, it's questionable at this point how many undocumented workers are going to feel comfortable, you know, sort of presenting themselves and stepping out of the shadows and signing up for this. And I would guess that unless those very issues, such as the portability, and what do I do if I encounter an employer who is trying to sort of hold this over my head and I lose the job, how much time do I have to, you know, sort of get on my feet and find a new job before I'm expected to leave? I think that those very issues, how they are formed in a final bill, will determine just how successful this program could be and whether or not the workers feel comfortable enough that they think there's enough benefit to it for them to come forward and register.
You know, we're going to have to stop here because we've come to the end of the time. I want to thank you both very much, Debbie and Richard Schell, for talking with us. The Schells are attorneys that specialize in dealing with immigration law. They have a practice up in the Chicago area. And if you have questions specifically about the law as it exists now, you can look for this book that they have co-authored that I've mentioned. It's titled U.S. Immigration and Citizenship Q&A, and it's published by Sphinx Publishing out of Naperville. And Debbie and Richard, thank you very much for giving us some of your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, David,
for having us on.
Our program, Focus 580, is made possible with support from Owens Funeral Home at the corner of Elm and University in Champaign, locally owned and operated and serving families since 1925. Owens Funeral Home invites you to join them in supporting public radio. Focus 580 is also made possible by a grant from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. Coming up a little bit later today, as part of the Afternoon Magazine, the topic in the 1 o'clock hour, Coping with Serious Illness. Journalist Richard Cohen and author and artist Susie Becker will be talking with Celeste Quinn about their experiences following the 1 o'clock news. Cohen was stricken with multiple sclerosis 30 years ago, and for years, Becker suffered seizures and eventually had surgery to remove a mass in her head. And they've each authored books about their experiences. Cohen is the author of the book Blindsided, Lifting a Life Above Illness. And Becker, her book is titled I Had Brain Surgery, What's Your Excuse? Celeste Quinn is the host for the show. Gets underway at noon here on AM 580, so you might want to tune in for that. Coming up in the next part of this show, we'll be talking with Melba Beals. She was one of 9 African-American students who integrated Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas in 1957. She has written about that and her life after in a couple of memoirs. She does a lot of public speaking now. She's also been a journalist, has worked in television news. She's visiting the campus, and will talk with us in the next part of the show. So we hope that you'll stay tuned. Right now, though, we'll take a break. We'll have news at 1 minute past the hour. Before that, an update on the commodity markets.
And with this update on the markets at 10:59.